Welcome back to Bisexual Killjoy, the place where we know bisexuality isn't a phase, it's a phenomenon. And I'm Bailey, and this is...
Lynn.
Today's episode is titled, Do I Exist? Bi Erasure and Discrimination. Now, for those of us who know what bi erasure is, for those of us who don't, we're going to get into it.
Before we dig in, Bailey, I have a question. What was your bisexual killjoy moment this week?
So, as I have become more aware of bi erasure and biphobia out in the wild, I've become more sensitive to it. And I see a lot of it on social media. I don't know if this is the case with you, but recently I saw a post from a pretty big content creator that was reading out a comment from an anonymous person who was basically calling bisexuals greedy, which we've heard before, and that they were homewreckers. And I thought, wow, what a thing to say with your whole chest in an anonymous forum. And so I posted kind of a snarky reply, which was, wow, imagine being this sad of a person that you felt the need to comment on a whole sexuality. I hope you feel bad. I'm sorry about your life, though. That sounds miserable. And, you know, there's always like risks and consequences of saying something like that. And some people were quick to, oh, what a bisexual thing to say. Bisexuality isn't real. I don't have time for that. But a lot of people like the comment. There's like 200 likes on that comment, but not a lot of support in the comment section, which in a way is its own form of erasure. But, you know, I don't feel the need to fight the good fight every time. And I don't even know if putting a comment in a very well-viewed video is even fighting the good fight. But, God, sometimes I'm just fucking salty. I have something to say. Do you know what I mean? Like, you've seen this, right?
I have. And I do think that it is part about fighting the good fight. Because I think that in the same way that people responded to your comment and were saying all of these things, and sometimes you don't want to keep up this strange argument that's going nowhere. I feel like a lot of people who passed that comment may have felt that way. And I think that liking your comment, standing up and being the bisexual killjoy and claiming that kind of virtual space is a kind of counter space. I think that by them liking it, it gives them their own validation of like, yeah, you know, somebody said it, it's not just me, we're moving on. And that's powerful, I think.
Yeah, I'll take it where I can get it. For listeners here who are bi plus, I'm not going to say 100% because what is 100% of anything, but have very likely experienced bisexual erasure at one point in their life. But for those of you listening who aren't bi plus, who are allies or people who want to learn about bisexuality or my mom, hi mom, this is probably a really new concept. Like, what do you mean that bisexuals are being erased? They're right there. And literally, yes, I'm sitting in my closet, not a metaphorical closet, an actual closet, and I'm doing this recording and I exist. But I have to tell you that bisexuality has this very precarious place in the world. And we're going to get into it. We're going to pick apart bisexual erasure as we know it right now. And it's a topic that's very near and dear to both of us. And Lynn has done me the biggest favor of the world to take the lead on this particular episode. So it's very theory heavy because Lynn is a smart cookie. But I promise you that when it gets theory heavy, that I'm going to ask lots of questions for all of us because she's the smartest person in this room. She's going to lead the way, but I'm also going to ask plenty of questions. So Lynn, why do you think bisexuality is invisible?
Well, I think a lot of reasons. The biggest thing is that bisexuality is harder to see in comparison to hetero and homosexuality, right? It's not easily visible. Bisexuality does persist as kind of like an unspoken concept, an idea that lives both in between and beyond these very stable binary categories. But the problem with concepts, I think, is that they can become very easily dismissible, right? We can see these two things very, very clearly as a kind of binary. And when bisexuality comes in as something that is both in between and in a lot of ways beyond, we can just kind of go, people can kind of go, oh, that's not really a thing because I'm not seeing it actively. So unless I'm walking around with like 3, 4, 5 partners of different genders on my arms, these can get really complicated.
I mean, but that is the expectation is that bisexuals are promiscuous in that way where all of us are just rolling around in these polycule gangs, which some of us are, but not all of us. Let's go back to concepts. You said that bisexuality is this concept that can be dismissed, but you and I, we're not concepts, we're people, right? And we can talk about theory for the rest of the episode for as long as you want to, I promise. But can we bring it down to the personal level? Like, what does it mean to be erased as a person? Lynn, when do you as a person feel invisible?
to bring it like super into what it means to feel invisible, like I think that I feel invisible in a lot of ways for a lot of reasons. Like I'm short and people literally run into me. I cannot tell you the amount of times that happens and they don't even bother to say sorry. People will just look over my head and it's like I don't exist. I am a person of color and I'm often read as a woman. The amount of times that I get talked over, this is just a part of my daily life, my daily experiences. I've had to just kind of deal with it in a way. In proper academic fashion, I feel really invisible in the classroom. When we're reviewing the syllabus, when we're talking about different LGBT topics, I've mentioned before, I'm a sociologist studying bisexuality, largely as a form of survival, as a form of self-defense. And that's because, as I've mentioned before, in all of my years of study, I've been in higher education for 8 years. Not once has bisexuality been explicitly in the syllabus. Not once, not ever, has bisexuality ever been spoken about without me bringing it up in the conversation first. And the few times that a professor claimed to know what I was speaking about, they offered me resources relating to transgender theory. And while bisexuality and gender transition, transgression have always been intertwined, my dear friend, we're past that epistemic rift. We know the distinction. So it was clear that I was on my own in this journey, and it was clear that bisexuality didn't exist even as a concept within academia.
You know, you're talking about this, and I'm thinking about when I was in grad school last spring, and I decided to take this women, gender, and sexuality course at the graduate level at Harvard University, because I was over at the medical school and I'd been studying how to read research papers and how to do scientific research. But I still didn't have that academic basis that I felt I need to write a proper all-encompassing paper that looked at bisexuality. And I was with Alice Jardine, who is honestly one of the best living feminist scholars. She retired last spring. I was in her last class ever. So I'm walking into this room full of people who are all seniors or are getting another master's degree. They have been inundated in this community for at least 4 years. And I was like ecstatic because I have got probably the queerest classroom I've ever been in at any point in my academic career. And I thought, yeah, all of these queer people are going to get it. We're going to talk about queer theory. And we did and we didn't. So preparing for my final paper for her class, I had this one-on-one meeting with Professor Jardine. And I told her I wanted to critique the omission of bisexuality in queer theory. And I asked her, like, who should I be reading? And the way she got quiet, this top academic in her field, this person who has been published, this person who has studied with some of the people who were the foundations for queer theory, didn't really have an answer for me. You know, she told me to read from the Journal of Bisexuality.
Bethany, what do we...
when that's the only resource you know.
Like, you know, this resource that apparently only other bisexuals read. So I'm looking at Foucault, I'm looking at Sedgwick, and I'm like, why aren't you talking about bisexuality? Homosexuality and heterosexuality aren't the only things that exist. And it's great that we have this discourse, but what about the bis? What about the pans? What about the pluries? And for my paper, I actually was fortunate enough to stumble upon Juana Maria Rodriguez and Jessa Ling, who actually talk about their bisexuality. Bisexuality as intersex with race. And without them, I would have just been hitting my head against the wall. And it was so frustrating and honestly disheartening about the future of academia and our place in it as bisexuals, because despite this plethora of bi-plus people in the world, we aren't represented. So that brings me to the real meat of this conversation, which is bi erasure. Can you please define that for us, Lynn?
Absolutely. So bisexual erasure, bi erasure is the cause of bisexual invisibility. Despite the existence of bisexual people, we know that we exist, we know that we're here. They are either consciously or unconsciously excluded from both queer spaces and heterosexual spaces. And, you know, for argument's sake, we could potentially make the argument that bisexuals and bisexual people are invisible because they don't exist. There are a lot of things that you don't see, not because that they're erased, but because they just don't exist. They aren't real. But if you're here, if our gentle listeners are here, and if we're recording this, it's because we know that bisexuality does exist. So if bisexuality exists but is invisible, how does it come to be that way? And there are a few hypotheses for how and where bisexual erasure occurs. But arguably, the most important one we're going to be talking about today is the kind of erasure that stems from political interests.
Okay, hold on. Before you get off on a tangent and talk about political interest and the political body that is inherent within anyone with a sexuality, i.e. everyone, let's take it down a level, okay? Let's take bi erasure down, because our listeners, whether they are bi plus or they're not, need to understand how pervasive bisexual erasure actually is. Because in my opinion, bi erasure happens at the political level, right? Like the top level, because it happens in everyday life first. Let's just think about it. When you look at the media, where are the bisexuals? Where are they? They're either missing, out cheating, or doing something super sinister, like Frank Underwood or Jennifer Check in Jennifer's Body. And so, like, we're murderers. When you look at LGBT spaces, despite the B being very prominent right there in the first four letters of that alphabet, it's so rare to find us. When you look at your classes, bisexuality isn't even talked about. You just said that. I just said that. When you look at social media, you see bi erasure, or at worst, vocal biphobia. If you don't have a queer friend group, you might not even have any bi plus friends. I didn't have any bi plus friends. I didn't think so until I moved to Boston. I moved into this intentional community, and lo and behold, I had happened to cluster with a shit ton of bisexuals. And we didn't know about it until we had all been friends for 3 months, because it's just not something you talk about. Bisexuals are invisible, but we are here.
Yeah, I think that there's this really big common misconception that bisexual erasure needs to be, like, overt, explicit, done in bad faith, and needs to be really loud. And far more common than that, bisexual erasure is in our water. It's in the air that we breathe every day. When we ask the question, are you straight or gay? We're communicating our understanding of binaries as real, as static, while simultaneously rejecting the existence, even the thought of intermediate or outside categories.
Have you seen those videos on TikTok that have someone basically swiping left and right to say if someone's straight or gay? And they look at them and like, oh, you're straight. Or they look at them again, oh, you're gay. And they categorize them like that. And every time I see one of those videos, I say, what about the bisexuals? And inevitably the comment said, they said straight or gay.
But
ma'am. There's perhaps a third or a fourth or a fifth or sixth category that we could add to this. Make it more challenging than just seeing someone with Doc Martens on and being like, gay. Because first of all, that's probably a bi plus person.
Anyway, that is so bi.
Have you seen those videos, or am I just on the wrong side of social media?
I'm not on TikTok with any kind of regularity, so I haven't. But it does remind me of those Jubilee videos. It's very binary-esque. It just reminds me of, like, kindergarten tests where something is either this or that. Like, I thought we were adults.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's up for debate. But I'm kind of curious, why do you think the rejection happens in the first place?
I think it starts with the refusal to acknowledge bisexuality as a possibility in the first place. This kind of class erasure, this erasure of the very category, is when bisexuality itself as a category is erased. Think of all the times those around you have said, bisexual? That's made up. Everyone chooses a side. Or the usual, there's no such thing as bisexuality. It's a myth.
At first, my note was to say, I like the idea of being considered a mythical creature, but then I thought, oh no, bisexuals are considered mythical creatures. We're called unicorns, right? One dating apps for the unicorn, for that adventurous couple who wants to get a third body in the bed. So while in theory, I like to be thought of as a mythical creature because it gives me an inherent power and mystery, I'm not a unicorn. Stop trying to hunt me.
Precisely. Yeah, you know, like, it's all fun and games until, like, we start being hunted individually. And that's a really curious thing, because that's another level where erasure happens. Individual erasure is, in a way, the next step. Once bisexuality is vaguely known as a category, that doesn't mean that it's become accepted. In fact, it's a lot more likely that those around you are going to think that it's most unacceptable for you to be bi. And to all of our gentle listeners, stop me if you've heard this one. I know that being bisexual is all the rage these days. But I know you, and you can't be bi.
Stop. I'll stop you. I absolutely heard something like that before. Go ahead.
Individual erasure is when someone broadly acknowledges bisexuality as a category. It can exist in the abstract, but they actively erase a specific person's bisexual desire. I find it happens most commonly when coming out to a parent or a friend that's monosexual, and they're actively trying to affirm that you do have a preference. In fact, you just don't know it.
Yeah, and I know a lot of the bi-plus women and femme-presenting people that I have spoken to in my interviews and casual conversation have told me that they experience this particular type of erasure the most if they are in a straight-facing relationship. And it's something to the effect of, oh, you're bi, but you're married to a man, so I guess it doesn't really matter.
Oh, Christ. And the next step after our lovely individual erasure is a delegitimation, which I really think is the most ironic one.
All right, you're going to have to define delegitimation. You got it the first time and I didn't. What is it?
I mean, I get confused too. The idea with delegitimation is that people will acknowledge bisexuality as a category, even a category that others can actively adopt, but will associate it with such a level of stigma as to make it profoundly undesirable. What's ironic about it is that in attempting to delegitimize bisexuality, it makes it more visible, like you're actively talking about bisexuality in this way. We've all heard the myths and stereotypes, you know, all bisexuals are cheaters. You just mentioned that they were homewreckers, people in the comments. They can't be trusted. Bisexuality upholds the gender binary. All bisexuals are transphobic. This comes from, both sides. If you repeat these myths enough, bisexuality becomes undesirable. It's not that you aren't bisexual. It's that you would never want to be in the first place. It's that you would never want to be associated with a bisexual person, even in the abstract.
God, when you say it like that, it really seems insidious to the point that I'm wondering who is perpetuating these stereotypes. It feels like monosexuals have an actual agenda. There is a monosexual council that meets and has a subcommittee dedicated to the suppression of plurisexuality. I mean, I know that in theory probably doesn't exist. It's more ingrained the way that any kind of bigotry is, right? Like, it's baked in. And I'm still sitting here wondering why.
Well, at the beginning of this episode, we mentioned that there are political investments in bisexual erasure, and there are. Monosexual people achieve common ground in agreeing that regardless of their disagreements and their fights amongst themselves, bisexuality is viewed as a threat and it must not exist.
They hate us because we love puns.
You know, I think that's just plain old jealousy. Monosexuals don't have any good puns.
I actually think that's true.
Largely, bisexuality is erased in order to preserve the stability of sexual orientation categories. If sexual orientation follows binary understandings of gender, then there is a categorical need to preserve the stability of monosexualities, mainly because you cannot prove a negative. You cannot prove that you are monosexual because how are you supposed to provide evidence of only engaging with one gender and that not now, not ever, will you ever engage with another? It's impossible.
And I know we'll talk more about binaries later in the season, but I just want to underline for our audience now that most people like binaries or just sort of feed into them because they are easy to understand. And human brains work by bucketing. What you were saying about kindergarten, which is this or that, and we are actively taught to think in terms of opposites. So when you introduce a fluid element like bisexuality, people get a little uncomfy. But discomfort isn't a bad thing, and I wish that more people understood that.
Precisely. And to that extent, bisexuality also threatens the primacy of sex as a diacritical characteristic.
Okay. Diacritical. Define that for me. For me, specifically. No, everyone else gets it, but I don't.
Okay. So the idea is that if bisexuality threatens the primacy of sex, monosexual people can discriminate on the basis of sex, gender, in their personal and romantic lives. No way around it. We've made grave efforts to limit and downright eradicate discrimination based on sex or gender, but it's widely allowed and expected that we discriminate on a personal level, with that being the only category and the only criteria for discrimination. Bisexuality threatens that by demonstrating that there is a possibility not to discriminate at all, not institutionally, not even personally.
So help me understand this a little bit more, because I hear what you're saying, but I'm having a hard time conceptualizing it. Could you give me an example?
Yeah, think about it. Today, it would be somewhat strange, though not maybe unexpected, to say that a local business person just doesn't hire women, regardless of their qualifications. They just see a woman apply and they said, nope, no thank you. And even if we did hear that, there's going to be outrage. We could file a lawsuit. Things can happen. We fought to be considered equal as workers. But somehow, it's totally acceptable to say that I just don't date women. I'm not attracted to them in any way, and I do not wish to engage. Of course, there are levels and degrees to this, but that's the core sentiment of monosexuality, isn't it? Gender becomes a category for acceptable discrimination. When bisexuality comes into the picture, we're saying, actually, maybe we don't need to discriminate based on gender in relationships, connection, or intimacy. Maybe gender is not a reason to categorically reject someone, and that destabilizes our current understanding of how the world works. To that extent, bisexuality also threatens norms of monogamy. Bisexual people do not reject the possibility of desire after being in a relationship. Just because I'm in a monogamous relationship doesn't mean I'm not bisexual. This threatens monogamy as you're currently meant to reject all attraction for anyone else if you already have a current partner.
Okay, so this is the perfect opportunity for me to talk about monogamy versus non-monogamy as a bisexual person. Full disclosure, I am a married bisexual person who identifies as a woman. My partner is someone who identifies as a man, and we're monogamous. When I finally came out to my family, they were like, well, does Richie know? Yeah. Richie knows. Are the two of you, like, exclusive? Yes, we're exclusive. We agreed to have a The thing he asked me on our second date, we just had a really nice dinner. We're sitting in his car. We had just kissed. And he's like, so, let's talk about some things. I'm like, okay, boundaries. He asked me, are you monogamous or polyamorous? And I'm like, that's a weird question to ask someone on the second date, but I really respect your enthusiasm and your worth right now. And I'm like, I'm monogamous. He said, cool. I am also. Would you like to be in an exclusive monogamous relationship with me? That is verbatim. That is not me.
I love that. I love that so much.
And so it's like, yes, of course, I would like that. But there's a stereotype that all bi-plus people are therefore polyamorous. And that is the only way that their bisexuality will be validated is if they have multiple partners of multiple genders. And there are bi-plus people who have that model. And then there are monogamous bi-plus people who it's just them and their partner. And I think because of that, when you are a monogamous bi-plus person in a relationship, your status or your identity is more likely to be erased because people put you in a category that is, oh, Bailey is a woman married to a man, therefore she is a straight woman only.
Precisely.
How is your relationship model set up? If you don't mind my asking, you can also tell me that.
I'm a polyamorous person, and my profound reasoning for that is that I think that there are so few people who are quote-unquote my type out there in the world, and why would I stop myself from engaging in connection, intimacy, and exploration that feels so wonderful just because I have a current partner? No, that works for some people. It doesn't work for me. I do have a current nesting partner, and she is epic and amazing. And we find that we just really experience a lot of joy for each other when we find someone who is interested in what we are interested in, that actually understands what we're doing. Me and my partner were both academics. We both love to do research, and we both love to talk about just the nitty-gritty of the problems of the world. And it's hard to find people who get excited for that. Mm-hmm. So whenever we find new people, it's like, oh my God, I'm so happy for you that you get to talk about this with more than just me, because we're all both have ADHD. We both want to keep talking about it. And it's fun to the extent that I can actively say that I'm bisexual, say that I'm plurisexual. But what I have found is that the monogamous presumption still surrounds me quite a lot. I can actively say I'm bisexual, and nobody's going to equate that around, at least around me. Nobody has been equating that to you're polyamorous. So having to come out constantly as a bisexual person and a polyamorous person and being on guard for those around me who are in relationships to not be accused of homewrecking or to not be accused of something, it's a lot to navigate, I think. That said, dating apps make it a little bit easier. Not a ton, but a little.
It's like the only nice thing I've heard is that about a dating app in a year. I think it's good that you and I have these different perspectives on it because we're like living examples of the fluid nature of bi-plusness. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And to that extent, if we can be this fluid out in the world, can we exist in a world that is ruled by binaries if we are determined to stay in our fluid, ever-changing state?
Yeah, and so we're here sitting saying that we exist, and ultimately the problem isn't us. The bi-plus people aren't the problem. We understand who we are as fluid sexual creatures. It's monosexuals' problems. The monosexuals. But why does this keep happening?
Well, I mentioned the epistemic contract, and it is epistemic insofar as it relates to the nature of knowledge, how that knowledge is produced, and what it is that we are allowed to know.
Okay. But what is an epistemic contract, and why should our listeners care? Listeners, not Bailey.
An epistemic contract is a social arrangement about what can be acknowledged or known. And that's not me. I'm citing Kenji Yoshino specifically. And this epistemic contract is also a political model. There are political investments. Erasing bisexuality keeps heterosexuality in a privileged position, and homosexuality as a necessary counterposition to that privilege. The commitment to preserve these kinds of binaries is inherently political as much as it is personal.
You know, when I tell people that I'm bisexual, I always follow it up with, I am bisexual for political reasons. Because for me, being a bisexual killjoy is about standing up to this kind of erasure, whether it's passive or active, subtle or overt.
Yes. Being a bisexual killjoy is acknowledging that it is always violent to presume that we must confirm it to either-or expectations and presume that binaries are unavoidable when they are always artificial.
Yeah, in thinking about sexuality and knowing that it is inherently political, we want our bi plus listeners specifically to know that they are not alone, despite the fact that we are systemically erased. There are so, so many of us. And I always go back to that statistics of all the bisexual Americans got together. We'd be bigger than the state of Pennsylvania. We'd be a swing state, y'all. Also, go vote. There is a community out there for all of you. It can start with social media. It can start with us. In terms of other communities, I'm always going to shout out the Bisexual Resource Center here in Boston, and specifically its Bisexual Resource Guide, which will be in our show notes this time because I figured out how to do it, because it has community resources compiled out by state.
Yeah, you can also check out Reddit groups that are specific to bisexuality or specific to your state, find meetup events, and if available, you can also check out your local LGBTQ center. It is not uncommon for them to have bi-specific meetups or discussion groups, and Bisexual Killjoy is also here for you. Please visit us on our Instagram, comment, and reply to each other in our posts. We have questions to say that we want to hear your voice in. That way you guys can also find each other, and that is the most important part of this project that we've embarked on.
So as we wind this episode to close, I do want to point out the fact that systematic erasure has actual health implications. It's not just me and Lynn sitting here whining. I know I mentioned this in the last episode, but minority stress theory points to the fact that recurring stress, which erasure is, has been shown to result in poor health outcomes. Bi plus people are sick at higher rates than heterosexuals and homosexuals. And I'll make sure the Feinstein and Dyer article, Bisexuality, Minority, Stress, and Health, is in the show notes too for your reading displeasure. The summary of it is, bisexual individuals are at increased risk for mental health, substance use, and sexual health problems, and this is due in part to stigma, hello, and discrimination. Future research should continue to examine how different dimensions of bisexuality relate to health disparities and the factors that influence them. There is also an urgent need to develop, test, and disseminate interventions to improve the health of bisexual individuals.
So, how do you protect yourself as a bi plus person in a world that was just not designed for you?
Step one, to ground yourself. Know who you are. You are a bi plus person. You are no less queerer than any other queer person. You are valid.
Step two is to call it out. It doesn't need to be overt or loud. It just needs to be enough to shock people to realize what it is that they're doing. Hey, she's bi regardless of the relationship she's in right now. Actually, I'm not gonna change just because you think I'm gonna eventually. The goal is not necessarily to make a huge change or scene in that moment in time where something happens, but it is to bring attention to the kind of violence that they're perpetrating and let them know that that's not okay. The goal is to remain steadfast in who you are and know that others' perceptions cannot shift or move you away from that.
It is so easy to let people erase you. It is more badass to refuse to disappear. One of the greatest things the late, great A. Billy Jones Hennen ever told me was that the best way for bisexuals to be visible is to be on boards, committees, research teams, etc. Be out. If you can, try to get involved with queer groups and show up for the bi plus people, because no one else is going to do it for us. And in A. Billy's obituary in the New York Times, this is how pervasive erasure is. They called him a gay man. They called A. Billy Jones Hennen a gay man in the New York Times when he was vocally a bisexual man his entire life. It can happen at every level, and don't let people erase you just because they don't understand it.
It's always important to come out, be out, and stay out. In big or small ways, your visibility is always a political action of resistance and community.
So thank you for tuning in to Bisexual Killjoy this week, where we know that bisexuality isn't a phase, it's a phenomenon. We are so excited for the rest of this season. Releases will be every other Wednesday through June, so we can take off some time this summer and plan an even better season two. To support our work, follow us on Instagram, rate our podcast, preferably 5 stars, so more people can find us. And we want to hear from you. You can share your stories with us on Instagram, or you can email us via bisexualkilljoy@gmail.com. Until then, keep being a bisexual killjoy.
Stay bisexual and stay strong.